is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Original song, tribute to Obi Wilson.
The people them cry, when they heard the news that Obi Wilson died. I say people them cry, plenty people cry, when they heard the news that Obi Wilson died. All over Grand Bahama, Western and Bimini, when they heard the sad news, they didn't know what to do. Yes, them people crying, man, they crying. When they heard the news that Obi Wilson died, everyone was confused. When they heard the news, man, these West Northern sub people get you. I say the people, them crying, everybody crying. When they heard the sad news that Obi Wilson died, when they heard the news that Obi Wilson died.
Good yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It's Wednesday, the 27th of September, 2023, and you are on the clock with Aaron Green, and that was Gary Delancey. That was the Bay Street Troubadour. This gentleman has a song. He's like old school rake and scrape solo made. He has a song for every event, every issue, everything that's on the Bahamian people's minds. When I heard that yesterday, I said, you know what? We need to share this with the people, man. We need to share it with the people because the real keepers of culture keep themselves close to the people. They keep their ears to the ground and their hearts in the communities. I wanted to share that song as we open up the show this morning. It's a Wednesday, which means it's a on-the-clock Guardian Radio AM Man Down Mashup Wednesday session where we go through the news. We're going to do a bit of open line this morning, Mr. Newry.
Definitely. Today is Bernard Colebrook's birthday.
Well, happy birthday, Bernard Colebrook.
Yes, I just want to make sure he should be 1936 to now. How much years is that?
Six and three, that's a seven.
A seven?
33, you say? Hold on.
1936 to now.
1936.
I can't do mental
so
math.
70 years is 2006.
1983.
Hold on, 70. Yeah, that's 80.
81.
87.
Okay. Bernard Colebrook, Jack.
I think.
Colebrook. I thought you worked it out. You said, which means
70.
2023 minus 1936.
Add the 70 to take it to 2006. And then another 17 years.
87.
Yeah.
He's celebrating 87 years old. He's 87 years old, young. He's listening today. I just want to extend happy birthday to him.
Happy birthday, sir.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So you're responsible for the cake, Mr. Newry?
You don't eat cake.
But I...
Well, you want to eat his cake.
You know the youth guard?
Yeah.
I was a member of the youth guard, the first cohort.
Okay.
One of the things we swore an oath to is to be prepared to eat birthday cake for anybody who couldn't eat birthday cake, especially if it was like religious and spiritual rules that prevent them from eating cake or health concerns like diabetes or sugar in the blood. Uh-huh. I sign up to take the risk.
That's a lot of sacrifice. I appreciate that.
National duty, volunteerism.
That's really good.
It pays off.
Yes.
It pays off.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I know we have a number of things slated. I know we have a couple of things we need to read.
Yes.
I know that we have one or two things we want to analyze. I still want to deliberate about grading the PLP. I think we want to hash it out. But hopefully we do that on the next hour. But this hour, let's concentrate. Do you have anything to read, first of all?
Yeah, I've got some live reads.
Let's do the live reads first.
So let's start with this central bank live read.
Go ahead.
Get up to $25 back when you pay with Sand Dollar, the digital Bahamian dollar, at Super Value, Quality Supermarkets, Solomon's Fresh Market, or Sawyer's Fresh Market. Spend $50 or more and submit your receipt online at sanddollar.bs/rebate. That's sanddollar.bs/rebate. Offer ends October 15th.
You know, I got to ask for that, right? Because I want to understand exactly what you said. You're saying that if I go to Super Value now, Super Value and what?
So you could go to Super Value, Quality Supermarket, Solomon's, and Fresh Market.
And if I spend $50, regular spend,
right,
like with money in cash or my debit card.
Right. If you spend $50 or more, submit the receipt online.
So I need to take a picture of it then?
Yes.
Okay.
And you're going to scan it, take a picture, you're going to send it to sanddollar.bs/rebate. When you go to that website address, it'll show you the instructions on how to send in your receipt.
And what do I get?
You're going to get $25 back in Sand Dollars.
See, I like that.
So if you pay $50 in Sand Dollars and you submit the receipt online to this website, sanddollar.bs/rebate, and then you get $25 in Sand Dollars back just for spending.
Easy, just I can buy it anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to do that.
Absolutely. And then now we're on to our on-the-clock Sand Dollar Trivia giveaway. Every day for the rest of September, that's this week, we'll be giving away Sand Dollars to digital wallet holders. Every week, players could win $30 in Sand Dollars. To be eligible to win, you have to have a digital wallet because we transfer in you digital Bahamian dollars. You have to answer the trivia question correctly. Now, you cannot win if you've already played and won before, unfortunately. Right? So this is for people who have not won before. You have a digital wallet, and if you get the answer correct, you can win $30 in Sand Dollars. So here are the numbers to call for the day: 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and 242-300-5720. 242-300-5720. Text line 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. Please include your text, your digital wallet information in the text. First question of the day. What is Andre Rogers, baseball legend's, birthday? Andre Rogers, we named the baseball stadium after. What is his birthday? To win $30 in Sand Dollars. Again, call 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720, or text in your answer at 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. What is Andre Rogers, our baseball legend's, birthday? When was he born? Mr. Urey. I found this article, today is the 27th, right? So I found this article in Monday's Guardian. Headline, Legal Handguns After Tough Vetting.
Okay.
Minister of National Security Wayne Monroe said yesterday he sees no reason why law-abiding citizens who apply for handgun licenses and who are properly vetted and found to be of good character and able to safely handle them should not be approved. But he said the vetting process needs to be stricter than vetting for shotguns and rifles. The Firearms Act provides that the grant or refusal of a special license for revolvers, quote, shall be at the discretion of the licensing authority, and every such special license shall be issued subject to such conditions and restrictions as he may deem fit. And so, I wanted to ask the audience this question, especially since I had crime on the list of issues or items to review in the Davis administration two-year review, I wanted to ask the question, should citizens be allowed to own handguns, open carry or concealed carry? I wanted to ask the audience that question as well, since it appears it's on the policymakers' minds and what they think about it. What do you think, Mr. Newry?
I scare the guns, Aaron. I scare the guns.
Why are you scared of a gun? A gun is an inanimate object.
Yeah. I scare of dogs, too. And they're friendly. But they got teeth. I know what dogs do with teeth. I scare the guns, Aaron. I scare the guns. I scare of what people could do with guns. I got to tell you a story. I'm not sure if you understand or I ever mentioned to you that I grew up in the inner city.
Yes.
I was a nice guy. Right? I grew up in inner city. But I grew up in inner city in the 90s when there was a proliferation of gang activities. The particular association I had were what I call soft boys who were forced to defend themselves, right, from the other bigger institutions, right? But as they organized themselves, they realized that one or two boats used to park on the wharf there, had yachts, had guns on them. They didn't know about guns, but they went in on these stuff and break into it, and they got guns. And our neighborhood became violent because they got access to these weapons. I'm afraid that you may be safe with your gun, but there are people like who I grew up with who are willing to break inside your house to get access to this gun.
Stick a pin there, because I want you to continue the story. Your perspective, I'm not shutting that down. But you said this thing. You said that the community got guns and then it became violent.
Yes.
Now, I want to ask you this. You sure it wasn't violent before it got the guns and the guns were just a way to manifest said violence, or the presence of the guns exacerbated existing violence? Or is it that you're talking about a community with conditions that generate violence, right? That it's likely that violence will occur in the conditions, and the guns made it more likely that violence would occur in the conditions. And then I tell you why I asked that.
And I'll answer all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's easy. It's harder for a person to approach you and physically harm you.
Right.
But that gun gives you space to remove yourself. You know, it gives you power. And I'm afraid of that. And like I said, my concern is there are a number of persons who would ordinarily turn the other cheek. But because they now know that people have guns, and they're broken, and these are thieves, and they could break in your place, be coming, right?
Yeah.
But when they see you have gun, they'll come and take it.
Right.
And they'll take it and they'll use it.
I will make the distinction, because I don't want to. I hope we're not saying that it's just violent people in these communities and the guns enable them to be more violent or act out that violence. That's not what we're saying, right? We're just saying that the conditions that people are living in.
Whatever way you want to describe it, I scare the guns. That's the overarching point I'm trying to make. Aaron, I scare the guns.
I feel you. No, I feel you. But the point I want to make is, so I come from a different community. I grew up in a suburban kind of space, right? And I would say to you that I could expect the same things to happen if in the spaces that I live in, right? It's just slightly different dynamics. I think in the same way that you say, look, somebody who is being bullied, somebody who is subjected to violence all the time, having a weapon now, right, provides some buffer that people would think twice before they step to you, right? But I think about things like property disputes and neighbors in suburban, right? You call it middle class and upper middle class communities. I think about people with property disputes, people who have issues with their neighbors, possibly being quick to turn to a gun, to pick up a gun to settle, right? And so I appreciate what you're saying, without a doubt. your experience in the city community, your experience with people and guns.
Then my neighborhood is fine guns. I remember one time a friend of mine fired one gun in McDonald's. I mean, you shouldn't call that name. But it happens that someone went to use the restroom and rest theirs down and then forget it. And then you find out that, never mind, I ain't even gonna bring up that story.
Yeah, but no.
Turn that in.
My point is,
that was a gun that could easily access.
Yeah.
And thank goodness that a person was in criminally minded and say, well,
I find that
square grouper. I'm straight. Yeah. You know? But I'm terrified of guns.
I got you. Let's go to this call. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning to you and your guests. How are you doing this morning?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, they have a true with Andre Rogers.
Yes, sir.
Can you repeat it again for me, please?
All right, you have a digital wallet, sir?
Oh, no.
Okay, but the question was, when is Andre Rogers' birthday? That's the question. But let me ask you a question. You ever get a piece of birthday cake from Andre Rogers' birthday, sir?
Boy, that's a long, 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 long time ago.
Let me rephrase it. Did you know Mr. Rogers? Did you know Andre Rogers? Did you grow up in that time with him?
I know him as a softball player, not a baseball player. His brother was the baseball player.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah, I know he born December the 2nd.
There you go.
1934.
There you go.
I know he's a Sagittarius. Like me, I on the 12th of December, and he on the 2nd.
Okay.
It's a good month.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I went to school with his brother, Randy.
Okay.
Yeah. And I work with his other brother, Roy, Paradise Island.
Okay. That's great. I mean, that's interesting history.
And Nassau Street is the homestead.
Absolutely. You have any stories of playing sports in the road with them in the community of social life.
The closest thing to the Rogers family was get strike out twice by the little brother Randy.
Okay.
I went to Western Sydney and I went to Sutton.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that little bit of history this morning, sir.
No problem, love.
Absolutely.
Have a
wonderful day. Again, the date, December 2nd, 1934, Mr. Newry.
Mm-hmm.
December 2nd, 1934. All right, I see we got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You are on the clock.
Morning, Al.
Morning. How you do?
I'm good this morning. And morning also. I didn't catch who was on the show this morning.
Mr. Newry.
This is Sheila, Landerham, Bahamas.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm good. So, just got back in the car, and I'm hearing your question about the guns, and I'm also listening to Mr. Newry and understanding he's grown up in the neighborhood and at a time where the neighborhoods really did become very violent, which was also paralleling the era of the drugs and the cartels, meaning the cartels and the drugs being imported into the country. And it became a business, which, of course, we still see today, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So in saying all of that, I think it, you know, another question that really needs to be discussed and probably on dedicated shows is the reality is we see guns in the neighborhood and for self-protection as well.
Mm-hmm.
We see, anything from screwdrivers, knives, and in working closely with the young men in the neighborhood, they also identify the situations which are driving them to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the thing is, yes, I know the incidents he's talking about and how the boats in the harbors where they were docking for the night would be, you know, once the boys realized guns were there. But, of course, it's way beyond that now. If anyone wants a gun, it's pretty easy from what I can see to find it in this country. And if you need a gun for protection, whether it's from, you know, drug-related pressures or whether you want to hit on somebody for another reason, obviously people that want to access guns can find them at any point in time. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming in all the time. They're being, well, I don't know, the police obviously would know a lot more about how they're coming into the country. But with having, you know, our island and so many boats moving around, including, you know, mail boats and pleasure crafts, and knowing that, you know, guns can be brought into the country if you're protecting yourself, I guess, if you're a yachting boat.
Mm-hmm.
They're available. They're there. So I think it really, you know, you're asking about how people feel about guns and defending themselves. And, of course, it's complex, because what's interesting is I feel safe in the community that I work in.
Mm-hmm.
At all times, I've never, you know, I'm, you know, people appreciate the work and they appreciate the people who are helping to identify and address a lot of the challenges.
Yes.
I've never at any point in time, no matter where I've been in that community, and admittedly, I'm not there in the, you know, I'm not there in the dead of the night, but I've never felt unsafe. I've never been felt like I'm in an unsafe situation. But however, on many other places on this island, I have felt unsafe, and I do feel unsafe as a woman. Who would like to come out more frequently to attend events in the evening. If I'm unable to find anyone else to attend them with me, I often hold back because I feel vulnerable if mm-hmm. simply driving at night.
Yes.
And I think so. If you were asking me that question, you know, would I want to carry a gun? I'm more and more tending to lean that way. I don't know if I ever would. But for our own self, you know, but again, you know, the chances are someone would be able to stop me on the road and take the gun from me, right? I'm a woman.
Right. There's a consideration. Yes.
Right. Right. But it's just, I think there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of underlying reasons, and the force is definitely working very aggressively to address that. Particularly, you know, I've noticed a lot this past month, and I think we really do appreciate that. You know, it's a preventative action. But, of course, the moment we know once the additional forces are off the street and checking, you know, checking who's toting the guns all the time, who has them in the trunk of their cars.
Yes.
Yes, guns are still being stashed in the community.
Yes.
That hasn't changed because people are going to hide them, but they're going to keep them out of a house. They're going to hide them in an abandoned house. And, of course, we all know how many abandoned structures we have within Historic Over the Hill, much less anywhere else.
Yes.
And that's why it's so important, again, that those buildings are either repurposed
or demolished.
Taken down.
Yes.
And I believe there is legislation on the books to do that.
Okay.
Now they're dealing with it downtown, but are they doing it in the communities? No, don't really see that happening. And we have a huge shortage of affordable accommodation for families.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's like one thing tags on to the other.
Yes.
We have a lot of things to address.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Sheila. I'm going to reach out to you off air. I'm hoping to have the members, I think, of the Firearm Association on the show on Monday to continue the conversation in another direction,
right,
from a different
right.
perspective.
Absolutely.
Yep. I'll right. reach out to you.
Okay.
Thank
okay,
you
thanks,
very
okay,
much.
Bye.
That's
thanks for some hearing.
Absolutely.
Pleasure, ma'am.
Sheila
okay.
Pritchard from Lendahan, Bahamas.
I just want to thank her personally because I know the effort she's doing for my community because I've seen her walk about there. So, and that, and yes, Lendahan in general.
Yeah.
But what I want to give an example.
Mm-hmm.
In circa 1995, 1999, that 90s range, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before police officers had guns.
Yeah.
Right? They patrolled the beat without the guns.
Yeah.
Right? Of course, gun proliferated through the neighborhood. And
mm-hmm.
we realized that it was a violent neighborhood and police weren't able to police the neighborhood. And of course, they got enforcers that have guns, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there were a number of shootouts between the criminals
uh-huh.
and the police officers.
Yeah.
Wantonly, just shooting at each other back and forth. And persons like myself are in the middle.
Caught in the middle.
If you happen to visit my house in where my stepfather lives now. There are still bullet holes in my room, like I some kind of criminal. By passerbys shooting back and forth I scared of guns, Aaron. You don't understand. Listen, I scared of guns.
Hold that. I with you. Hold that. I come in now. Let me go to this caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Miss Green.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Nuri.
Blessings to you.
First of all, it's very easy to hide a gun. You could just put it in. It don't have to be in the spot.
Don't give people... Because you spark ideas.
But it's common sense. You just need to put it in the plastic bag that it don't get wet.
Yeah, I got you, but let's...
And throw it in the bush on the side of your house and go for it when you need it. But now, second thing. The only supposed to be in this country, unless special permission is given by the Commission of Police, shotguns for hunting. Now, how much people you know in New Providence go hunting, other than a few hunters that go to Andrus or Abaco once during the year for white ground pigeon and bullhorn shooting? Very little. But many people around here have shotguns, and they don't have them for hunting. They have them for protection of self and premises. We all know that. We also know that it's very difficult to stop guns from coming to this country because America is one of the biggest countries of ammunition production. And all the out islands, we are separated by land, water, whatever else have you. And all the different marinas, starting from marinas in Lightfoot Key, canals in Lightfoot Key, canals coming up right with the Defense Force bases. I've been on yachts that come right up through the canal, right past the fence road bed, with things on the boat that just pulled up to the dock and put in the cars and go uptown. All the marinas around Atlantis, we don't know what's coming in them because there are no custom officers be there to watch them boats and check them boats when they come in. I used to work right up on East Bay Street by Brown Boat Basin, where they had the little marina by Rubis. I used to be there at night. A lot of times, their boats come in first thing in the morning, pull up right to the marina. People come off the boat with all kind of bags and stuff. You don't know what they got. Go by the supermarket shop, come back. But you don't know what they took out in them bags. It's very difficult in a country like ours to police guns coming in here. They don't only come in for crime. It's just a big market for the sale of illegal guns. All through Haiti, Jamaica, all over the place. The manufacturers of guns in America is big business selling ammunition.
Sparky, that's why the CARICOM ministers have put together a task force or a committee to focus on a multinational strategy.
Before you cut me off, though, the incident, I'm saying very difficult. It's very easy to get yourself in trouble. Having something when you got a gun in your hand, it gives you that feeling of power.
Mm-hmm.
That the other person don't have a gun. Even if you have a cutlass or a knife, you got the gun. The rabbit got the gun. The other night before, I go, don't cut me off right now. The other night, Sunday night, like I told you before, I fell the other day and I injured myself, and I'm still trying to recover, especially the hold of my right side. I'm going around with a walker. Somebody came to my front gate, Ms. Green.
Mm-hmm.
It's so disgusting. They came to my front gate, took the lock off my front gate. They just had the lock hanging in the little hole.
Yeah.
They locked the lock on the outside of my gate. Then they took the old wiry clothes hangers.
Yeah.
They took that and they wrapped it around the bottom of the gate, bringing the two gates together, and they tied it in. And I had to be a man to tie that like that. And that. I had to take my walker from my master bed, go out on my porch, walk down the back of my yard, go to the back gate, come up the side by the lake, and come around the front to cut that stuff off and open my lake from the outside. Then they took the dog leashes that I hang on the gate for the dog, took them and tied them in knots. They tied it to them with knots I could have had. I had to cut them.
Sparky, you need to put cameras up, okay?
That's the thing. I've been meaning to put cameras up, but sometimes you don't have the money all the time to do things.
I got you, Sparky. I want to thank you very much.
But that's a nasty thing that person did to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Sparky. You need to get cameras up right away. And if it's not too late, put some dust. See if you get some fine dust and take a picture. See if you capture any fingerprints. Maybe you could compel the police to come and take fingerprints. I'm not pleased with that at all, Sparky. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Producer, let's check that phone line, please. There's the article, Legal Handguns After Tough Vetting, in Monday's Guardian. Very interesting read for people who are following the discussion. One of the things of note, Monroe said he was unsure just how many licenses exist for handguns, but added an audit is underway to make the determination. He said, though, less than 1% of those licenses are held by private citizens. Less than 1%, the other 99%+ must be by uniformed officers, whether police, defense force, whatnot, authorized to carry those weapons. Mm. Good morning, caller.
Good day, just talking away along with you and Nuria, Aaron.
Morning, Bremen. Blessings, how are you?
We need justice, law, and order in the Bahamas here.
Yes, sir.
But what I want to let Sparky and everybody else know is that the Chinese makes gun also and gunpowder from that time.
But, I mean, for thousands of years.
Say it again?
For thousands of years.
All right, then.
All right.
I don't know about the thousands of years, but from I was out there, when I could have seen, they was making gun and gunpowder.
Sparky, I can end this call. I mean, Bremen, I can end this call right now. I refuse to believe it. Especially since they're not offering a course at BTVI for it. I'm going to message you later on that one, Bremen. I need you all to start writing. Every Bahamian should be an author, Mr. Newry. Every Bahamian has a story to tell that's most important for the collective to understand who we are and how we got to this place. Everybody. I got a text here that says, I think that less than 5% of our population should have handguns. I disagree with you. Let me take a pause, Mr. Newry, for a moment. Let me throw out the second trivia question of the day. What is Pauline Davis's birthday? Phenomenal track star, sprinter. What is Pauline Davis's birthday? We're looking for Pauline Davis's birthday to win the Sand Dollar $30 prize to be sent to your digital wallet. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron Gray. Good morning, Newry.
Blessings.
Why? Because I want to give my condolences to the greatest minister in the Bahamas,
Fred Mitchell. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Hello?
Good morning,
I thought you
were
talking about Fred Mitchell, then you changed your name. Sorry, go ahead.
No. Fred Mitchell in there.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. To the Wisco family for losing a great entrepreneur and a woman advocate, a disabled advocate. So I want to express that before I begin. I agree with in some cases, listen to Sparky, listen to the young lady. I used to say back then we should arm ourselves, but when I really think about it, I don't think we need to arm ourselves. I think we need to be more positioned to go back to a system that can work, like a local government system that can monitor in our community.
You're saying that we shouldn't relax access to handguns and pistols until we have expanded our governance mechanisms, providing a more effective mechanism for oversight and for management?
Right, boy, you should be in the green card and you're trying to put it in the green English. They understand exactly what the fuck is saying. But yes, we should look to that avenue first.
All right.
Look to that. Not just go wild. I mean, America, I appreciate America live arming themselves and all of that, but a lot of the Caribbeans who did not arm themselves, like other Caribbeans, they almost crying free in my way. So the islands of the Bahamas is basically crime-free. The most of our crime is not a west; it's an urban area.
You sure about that? One of the questions I had under the line item, crime, is it a crisis if the criminals are killing themselves?
Let me ask you a question. How many people firing gun out resident in Finland live up in that area?
You'd be surprised, my cousin. I don't want to talk about
it.
You would be surprised, Pumpkin Eater. I don't want us to have these trite, trivial conversations where we don't interrogate and dive deeply into it. Because what I'm telling you as a little suburban kid is you would be surprised that these things manifest in other communities, but in different ways.
Yeah,
that's
but
all
that's
I say.
That's why I'm asking. I exercise my human rights to ask the question.
Hey, Pumpkin Eater. What do you mean you exercising your human rights to ask the question? First of all, you are a very, very good media specialist, so don't play me like that. But second of all, we know that the crime operates differently in different environments and in different communities. And I'm certainly not saying that people in the suburbs, in upper middle class and upper class communities are having the same experiences every night as people and every day as people in the inner city. I am not saying that at all. But who you think are the young people who have quick access to guns? And Yuri said in his experience, in his community, they discovered guns. They discovered where they were and went to get them. In many instances, in these upper middle class and middle class communities, young people are accessing their parents' guns, their uncle gun. Their daddy is a police. Their brother's a police. They're accessing the guns that way. Right? And these are the things we need to delve into before we make a collective decision, right? Because this is one of those collective decisions. This is one of those decisions everybody should be consulted on, and everybody should prepare themselves to give an informed opinion to the state when the question arises. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. I miss you.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Very good. Do you have the answer to the trivia yet?
No. Let me have it. The question, Pauline Davis's birthday.
Is it July 9th, 1966?
Yes, it is. July 9th, 1966. Dear caller, please, I'm going to transfer you over to the producer, and he's going to take your digital wallet information.
Okay.
Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
We've got a winner, Pauline Davis, July 9th, 1966. Producer, I'm going to go to the other call. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. How you do?
I'm fine, thank you. Listen. The Pumpkin Eater was talking about crime, where I guess the past prime minister lived in that area and stuff. But what you need to realize, the difference between the suburbs and the inner city, mm-hmm. is the abundance of persons.
Mm-hmm, the density.
And there you have more people. The crime would seem to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me? Because there are more people there and because there are things that happen in those areas that probably isn't broadcast because they don't want persons to know that this house broke in or this person got robbed because they don't want people to tag in those areas. So it's not that it's not happening. You know, it's just that there are more persons, it's more likely for more things to happen and so on and so forth. So I think that's the difference.
It's
not that it's so much better in the inner city. It's just that there's more people. So more persons interacting, more things will happen.
And a higher class, we use their language, provides or affords a greater degree of privacy, right?
Yeah.
Like the people in the inner city, they don't get no privacy. We got to talk about all the crime happening to them. We got to talk about everything. We don't talk about it in an attempt to resolve it, you know. It's almost as if we talk about it in an attempt to shame them. To say, see, y'all in the inner city, y'all, yeah, nothing y'all could do but crime. But the people in the suburbs and the gated communities, upper-end housing developments, they have this degree of privacy that the people in the inner city and more dense communities don't get.
Yeah, because even if the person... let's just say gossiping about the neighbors. Because
yeah.
the houses are so far apart, the neighbor will know. But in the inner city, you try that, and the neighbor can hear you through your wall, her wall, and the next neighbor wall. They can hear everything you're saying about them. So all those things combined can cause confusion and cause mischief.
Conflict, yeah. Absolutely.
So that's the only difference. It's because the abundance of persons are more.
Do you think that this...
You take a net, and you go fishing in where there's a few fishes. You likely to come up with one or none. But you take that same net and you go where there's a school of fish, you can come up with a whole stock.
I want to ask you and Yuri a question, right? There's going to be, well, from reading the article, Monroe, we'll Illegal Handguns After Tough Vetting, 25th of September, 2023. And the article, Monroe, We'll Toughen Gun License Rules in the Nassau Tribune, 30th of March, right? 2023. After reading those articles, I get the impression that there will, if they move forward and sort of relax the policy around handgun ownership, right? And the vetting process and the licensing considerations, right? I imagine that to have a gun, you have to have a gun safe. And you have to prove the ability to secure both the weapon and the safe, the space you're securing, locking the weapon in, right? You have to be able to prove those things. Do you think that this will arise as a natural sort of discriminatory element? Will you find that fewer people in inner city communities will qualify to own and possess a handgun, and more people in suburban style, single home style communities will have access? And do you think there's a way to equalize that? Is there anything we could do to make it more equal?
Well, obviously, the persons in suburbs and upper class will have hands up on something like that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the mindset of men, they will obviously assume that because you are a suburban raised or live, you may have less chance of using your weapon and more chance of using your words, whereas an inner city person...
Well, no, just based on your ability to secure the weapon, you know.
Even the ability to secure the weapon, I think if you can show where you have the... As an inner city, if you can show where you have the ability to secure the weapon and secure the safe, they still need to take that into consideration. They can find some excuse to not give you that. So I don't see it being fair. Now, if they would remove it from politics, and politics too will take a play in it, because persons in the inner city depends on their connection to still be able to get their hands on it. You understand me? With less vetting, we just won't know, you know, how they got it. However, even though they can show that they can use, can secure it and use it properly, because of where you live,
yeah,
they can say, oh, but you know, your house more likely to get break into.
It's a big risk.
The person may be able to get it. So they can find all kinds of excuses to not give it to you if you don't have the right connections.
Thank you.
That's
how
I see it.
Thank you very much. I will go to this next caller. We got to read the text. I'm Ms. Nure, we'll read the text before we go. And more, I'm thinking that the real shifts that need to occur for us to implement a policy like that, or laws like that, the real shifts are cultural shifts. They're big issues, though. They're big shifts that are required, and a lot of questions we have to ask ourselves about how we're living in our communities and how we think we're allowed to treat each other. Personally, I think that the bully culture has taken root in all of our institutions, and that that I would, like Mr. Nure, I'm not scared of guns like Mr. Nure, but I'm scared of people with guns in a culture where bullying and these types of hierarchical power dynamics are so entrenched. It concerns me greatly. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Ms. Green.
Morning, sir.
Yeah, you know, I always like your ideas, the way you think. I just say I appreciate it, right?
Yeah, man, thank you.
So the last caller, I would have loved what she would have said as far as discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
We know it exists. It will always continue to exist. So inside the inner, where I guess they saying is the, only the center, and the outer, the suburbs. So what happens is now, it's the same paradigm. People move from the inner city to the outer cities, the suburbs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the mindset doesn't change. But what I'm saying is, if I'm an elderly man aging in the inner city, I never had a criminal record, and I was convicted, I deserve a licensed handgun. Now, here's where I just would like to say this, because when Mr. Manu said stringent measures, right,
mm-hmm,
or vetting, right,
mm-hmm,
I agree with him totally, but I'm hoping that the geniuses would listen to former criminals, have a criminal panel, guys who have reformed, because mm-hmm, I know of people who were mixed up with infamous drug dealers, and they have licensed handguns. They have reformed, they are business people, they're making money, they don't have no need to rob and be caught up in problems. But the fact is, we don't know what they have done, and we don't know their character, and everybody hides behind a business or a marriage and all. That's what people does. So mm-hmm. it's still discriminatory in any which event. But I'm hoping that, let's say, if I wanted a license for a handgun or anybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
You vet the criminal poison history, you don't go by what the police think or say, because some of their friends and people who they know who have boiled fish houses and restaurants, they get these licenses for these handguns. Maybe they're not criminals no more. Maybe they may still be affiliated. We don't know who was affiliated, but I'm hoping that one of the stringent measures would be that if I buy the gun brand new, right, you mm-hmm. know the caliber, you have the serial number, et cetera, right?
Yes.
There should be certain stipulations. Number one, before I issue this gun, we will take this into the ballistics department, fire this gun a few times, keep all of these shots
yeah.
so we can do the ballistics, the striations, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So that we, when I have this gun, we find similar striations or this gun is linked to any crime. And then you should also be where the person bring in the gun like a certain period of time so they could check to see if it was used in any
yeah.
crime. So I'm hoping they're along those lines. And so if you alter the striations in the barrel, the gun should be seized and you should never be allowed to own one.
Yeah.
This is what I'm willing to go through because I'm at the mature age. If I have a licensed gun, it'll definitely be used when it's needed. But and also, one of the measures should be, no one should know you have this gun. You shouldn't go around bragging and showing people this gun.
It's like your political affiliation.
You go around showing people you have a gun. You know different from the ghetto youth them.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that most people are not intelligent, I mean, emotionally.
Yeah. I got you, 52.
Most people are not emotionally mature enough to do that.
Yeah.
So you need input from the public. You can't just go along with your own understanding. It may be narrow because a lot of people have a lot of concepts out there, man. Give thanks.
Absolutely. Of course, you got to talk to the people whose lived experience, right? They've lived with the gun. They've been forced to live with the gun. They've been forced to reconcile a life of not being a criminal in the midst of an environment that intends to breed criminals. And these people should be engaged in the process. Ms. Nuri, I will read the text, and then I want to read the questions I had. But I want to also say right at this point right now to say thank you for joining, you know, into the conversation and taking it in the direction that you did. I'm so glad that you took the lead, and I appreciate that. Again, a text, I think less than 5% of our population should have handguns. Another text, tell them sort out the marijuana bill first before the gun. And why Purity Bakery Roman meal bread slices so big all of a sudden? Now the bread runs out faster. I think you buy in the old-fashioned loaf. So you buy in the old-fashioned loaf, and maybe they need to run some regular loaf. Another text, the Bahamian population isn't emotionally intelligent enough for handguns. On the other hand, if criminals have guns, non-criminals have to protect themselves. What a conundrum. One of the questions I have is, if we relax the policy around handgun ownership, will we then need to shift policy on security services and security guards? Will they all need to be armed? Does it require now a far more rigorous vetting and oversight for who can become a security officer? Should stores and businesses be able to restrict people? Or at least the way I framed it was, which businesses, stores, agencies, etc., should be allowed to restrict access for people carrying weapons? Another text, good morning, Ms. Green. I feel this is a step in the right direction, but it should be an age limit plus own a home and show proof of a rental agreement. Well, because if you can have a safe, you have to show proof of where the safe is going to be secured. And if the safe is built into the structure that you rent, and what happens when you leave? I mean, you're not forced to leave the gun there, but how quickly can you get a new safe for the gun? We need to be armed. I know people will say you shouldn't be outdoors at a certain time, but I shouldn't have to be worried about who will try to rob or invade my space either. We need to be armed. See, here's the next thing. This is something I can't reconcile with. Don't tell me I need to be inside my house at 11 p.m., 12 p.m., 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m. I'm in the Bahamas. There's a reason why I'm in the Bahamas, so I could walk out my house at any hour of the night and go look up into the starry, starry night and enjoy why I'm here. Probably the power could be off anyway. So I need to be outside. Another text. I'm concerned about road rage and sweethearting because I could see if handguns become legal, this could turn out badly. Good morning, Aaron. All retired law enforcement officers should be allowed handguns, in my opinion. So pause. All retired, you don't mean reserve. You mean retired. Okay. All retired law enforcement officers should be allowed handguns, in my opinion. I mean, particularly if there was an issue while they were on the force with, you know, threats of death towards them. I can understand that. Another text, concerning handguns, a board or committee from multiple sectors of society should decide if you get one. And another text, Ms. Green, government needs to build a shooting range for the public. Look into this, please. Well, if people are going to have to go through a vetting process, and I hope that if it occurs, there would be a regular period of reevaluation, unlike what happens with the driver's license. Mm. Every year, you have to come in and relicense and do a preliminary test. Certainly, if you have an issue, you got to come in. But every minimum of 2 years, you have to do a test. You have to do an eye test. You have to do a hearing test. You have to do a mobility and agility test to see whether you are able to handle the weapon. I think all of these things. And so there should be a public shooting range so that people can go and practice and maintain their skill. Because you have to be skilled to use a gun. Mm. I mean, let me rephrase that. You should be skilled to use a gun. You don't have to be. It's almost like a gun to use itself. So here are the questions I want to throw out. And again, on Monday, we're going to have representatives from the Firearms Association, the lobby for responsible use and ownership of guns in the Bahamas. Here are the questions I have on the table. We started with the first one. Should citizens be allowed to own handguns, open or concealed carry? In what instances are private citizens granted handgun licenses currently? Should the vetting process and licensing considerations be different for handguns and shotguns and rifles? And should the vetting process for any firearm possession be stricter? Do we need to make it stricter? What does it include now? What do we think it should be? If citizens are armed, should security officers be armed? We can talk about the dangers of firearms in the home. Should restrictions around BB guns and air pistols be relaxed? Should accessories like bulletproof vests and night goggles be accessible by ordinary citizens? Are we going to ban camouflage clothing and gear if we relax the rules around handgun ownership? And I think very importantly, how does police engagement with citizens change if open and concealed handgun carried is allowed? Is every officer now going to be armed? Will all officers wear body cams? What will the training look like, right? Because obviously the training and means and methods and ways of engagement, the police and citizens, has to shift. And the real question is, culturally, are we ready? And it's not just the few that may be legally licensed to own, carry, use a weapon, but all the rest of us, are we culturally ready for a shift like this? Anyway, you've been on the on-the-clock half of the On-the-Clock Guardian Radio AM Man Down Mashup Wednesday session. And when we get back after this break, Mr. Newry is going to take the lead. He looked at me and he said, "Miss Green, I am the captain now." Mm-hmm. So when we switch over to this hour, I think we're going to get back into the PLP two-year review. Davis administration.
Let's see how that goes. Let's see how that goes. I can open make up a line shortly.
Okay, there you go, sir.
Might even be open line. Let some people call in and say what's on their mind.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, and then we have an in-between, too.
Okay.
Okay. This has been On the Clock with Aaron Green. Thank you very much.